The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning.
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I hope you guys are enjoying your new week. Here in Israel, we've already moved our clocks back to winter time. And even though it's kind of, you know, sounds insignificant, it's like 1 hour here or there, it definitely gives the feeling that we're going into winter. There's just nothing more that takes you into winter than the movement of the clocks. All of a sudden, you know, on that one day, the sun goes down very early in the morning, and there is just this general feeling of kind of going into the winter. We have had rain and some strange storms going on, but just for those people who have friends and family in Israel, remember now that we are all on the same time. So it means I had to be earlier a little bit, I had to be ready a little bit earlier today for you guys.
Amazing that it really does. It does throw you completely. All right. Let's just talk about the coalition. Get a coalition update from you. Prime Minister Netanyahu met yesterday with Benny Gantz, and that's in a further effort to put a new government together. Are they making any progress? I think just by meeting, they're making progress, but is anything substantive actually taking place?
Well, it was interesting that there was nothing of any substance that was discussed, at least in the press conference that followed the meeting. The meeting took place, by the way, at IDF headquarters in Tel Aviv, the so-called Kiryah in Tel Aviv. And that seems to be kind of neutral ground for both of the leaders. Of course, this meeting was at the invitation of Benny Gantz, who now has the opportunity to form the government, having been handed the mandate by President Rivlin last week. And so it was Gantz who reached out to Netanyahu to invite him to the meeting. And it was at the Kiryah in Tel Aviv. The two leaders were very, very cautious not to blame the other for the impasse that clearly continues, but also not to create too much optimism. So there was really nothing of substance discussed when the two leaders came before the cameras to explain what had happened, other than to say that the meeting had been held in a good spirit and that there would be a further meeting to be held. What we also know is that earlier during yesterday, the negotiating teams of the respective parties met at Kfar Maccabiya, and there was a little bit more coming out of the meeting between the negotiating teams. In fact, Minister Yariv Levine was the one who did most of the speaking. He, of course, represents the Likud, and he made clear that when the teams met up, that he and their negotiating team represented all 55 members of the right-wing bloc. So that's an interesting reiteration, because I think that presents a very substantial potential roadblock in terms of getting a coalition together, because if the Likud is saying we represent all of the right-wing parties, and as Blue and White was warned before, and as the bloc have signed up, they will not be negotiating separately with Kahol Lavan party. So he's representing the whole 55-seat bloc. And of course, Kahol Lavan would much prefer just to be negotiating with the Likud separately, because of course that 55-seat bloc includes, for example, the ultra-Orthodox parties, and it includes all of the right-wing parties that have agreed to support Prime Minister Netanyahu, albeit not enough people to get him past the 61-seat majority that is required. So all in all, it kind of sounded positive, but really nothing of any substance to talk about, and many, many, many issues which could cause this to fall over very easily. So we will just be watching to see when the next meeting will be taking place. And I guess in the background, the various negotiating teams will be meeting, and that's where the substantive problem issues will no doubt be arising, and will need then to be escalated to the leaders for them to potentially talk about in order to resolve at a face-to-face meeting. So right now, no government, and in all honesty, no real sign of any breakthrough at the moment.
All right. So let's move on to the killing of ISIS leader al-Baghdadi. That was proudly announced yesterday by U.S. President Donald Trump. How significant is the death of this leader?
Well, I think it's significant to President Trump and potentially to the U.S. in general, perhaps to the U.S. political arena and maybe even to the U.S. Military arena. So, I mean, because Trump had really laid out his stall, saying that Baghdadi was one of the most sought-after people as far as U.S. military was concerned, and Trump was absolutely determined to bring this one home at almost any price. And it's interesting to read some of the stories that are coming out about how al-Baghdadi was tracked down and how it potentially was one of his wives who told the U.S. CIA exactly where he was located and the whole operation that went on in order to track him down and ultimately yesterday to what sounds like allow him to commit suicide. It doesn't sound as if though it was the U.S. forces who were the ones who killed him, but rather that ultimately he was pushed into a corner and that he detonated his own explosives vest that he was wearing, killing himself and some of his children and some of his followers who were around him, his security people, in the process. But I don't think that Baghdadi really represented a major threat, certainly not as far as Israel is concerned. And I don't really think in the Middle East either, because in essence, ISIS has really been brought down to size. Once upon a time, ISIS was a major threat in the Middle East and indeed around the world. I think in more recent times, ISIS has been much less of a threat. I think that they have really been cut down in terms of their military threat and their capability. And so therefore, Baghdadi as a leader was potentially a ticking time bomb in the sense that he might suddenly arise and get a further following and support in the future. But right now, he really wasn't presenting a major threat. And reports suggested that he was in ill health and that he wasn't doing very well, and that even as a personal leader and as somebody that people would be inspired by, he wasn't particularly at his strength the way he was in previous years. So I think that it was interesting to see an assessment by Amos Yadlin, who is the former head of military intelligence. He heads an institute these days for security studies, and he was the one who said that whereas Baghdadi's death is, not being lauded in the way that one might expect by Israel, because really this is not a huge celebration. He wasn't really number one in terms of those who are wanted by Israel and those who present a major threat to Israel. And really, this is all nice and fine and well, but let's not forget that Iran is really the major threat. And so this doesn't really remove any huge threat that Israel has to contend with at the moment. So that's kind of the general view. Having said that, of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu congratulated President Donald Trump on the operation on Baghdadi's death, which, nobody will be mourning at all, not anybody, at least in the Western world, not in Israel and certainly not in the US. But really, it doesn't change the lie of the land in the Middle East. What is interesting for me is the whole Kurdish involvement, because we discussed last week and we have been discussing the way that the Kurds have been effectively deserted by the US. And here it now comes to light that the Kurds were absolutely fundamentally involved and were helping the US forces to track Baghdadi down. And it would have been very, very ironic had Baghdadi been killed yesterday or died yesterday by his own hands while the Kurds were being attacked by Turkey as a result of the U.S. withdrawal from Syria. That would have been very ironic. So I think the timing was good that finally the President Trump administration has managed to convince the Turks to cease their attack on the Kurds. And of course, the Kurds have come out yesterday in the wake of Baghdadi's death as being one of the major heroes in the story, people who've really helped a great deal in order to track him down.
What's interesting is I actually thought it was fake news late yesterday about the Washington Post initial headline around Baghdadi. Did you see that?
I saw the initial reports that came out kind of left you feeling like the U.S. forces had killed him, right?
No, I'm not referring to that. I'm referring to and I see now that Fox News are talking about it, that Washington Post publishes al-Baghdadi headline referring to the ISIS leader as an austere religious scholar. And that was the headline. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I thought to myself, it must be fake news. There's no way that they would do it. But this was the headline. Abu Bakr Bakr al-Baghdadi, austere religious scholar at helm of Islamic State, dies at 48.
Okay. I didn't read that. And of course, I suppose there are some people who might consider him to be a religious leader. I mean, what is for sure the case is that, of course, ISIS comes from an extremist Muslim position, and certainly the extremist Muslims were involved there. So there would be some people who would consider him to be some sort of a religious leader. But I wouldn't have expected them to be in Washington.
No. And then they changed it to the headline to Abu al-Baghdadi, extremist leader of Islamic State, dies at 48. So quite an unbelievable, I think, a way that the Washington Post referred to that story.
And I sort of wonder to what extent it's trying to undermine or not the situation of President Trump, because there seems to be no doubt in my mind that this, all the news around it and the action that's been taken and the fact that the Trump administration has pushed this so hard is really part of an election campaign.
Oh, there's
it's
doubt.
It's really part of
there's
the
no
election process.
From Trump's point of view and from the Democrat point of view, and certainly from the left media's perspective, they need to downplay this as much as possible, because I certainly don't want to give credit to the man for having achieved anything. It's actually the most horrific state of affairs, that you have absolutely no idea which media outlets you can rely on and which you can't, because everybody has an agenda. It is quite and I think I might have mentioned this to you before. I'm finding, in fact, on this note, and I've been debating talking to them directly about it, I'm finding the Times of Israel exactly the same. They are very clearly they very clearly hate Netanyahu, and they very clearly hate Donald Trump, and every headline and every way that news is delivered there has now become around that narrative, which makes me less trusting of what they are reporting, and I find that very problematic.
Well, the truth of the matter is that we are so heavily influenced by what we read in the press. And, we still all come from a position where if you read something in a formal newspaper, which is a recognized, publication, that there's kind of some truth, when they're quoting facts, that you believe what they're quoting. Unfortunately, once upon a time, whereas certain publications were well known for being of one political view or another, these days it's taken to the extreme whereby we can't really always even trust what we're reading in some of these publications. And it goes even further than that. It makes us wonder whether the administrations, whether the governments that are being reported on don't have an agenda of their own in terms of carrying out, for example, this attack on Baghdadi. One just wonders whether this is really in the U.S. security's best interest, or whether this was just a Donald Trump campaign action in order to be able to show success some of the things that he promised he would do ahead of next year's election. So unfortunately, we're all having to really be very, very firm in assessing how accurate the reports are that we're reading.
Absolutely right. There is an important story, but I'm going to hold it over for tomorrow, Anthony, if you don't mind. But it is a very significant one, especially for us here in South Africa. And that's talking about the Arava region and their reliance on solar. But I do want to talk about that tomorrow, if you don't mind. Time is 8:01. That's Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. We speak to Anthony Monday through Thursday at 7:45.